If you think about well-known people from Shingetig, there aren't very many that come to mind. You may know of Skip and Bill Hinnant, whose father established the Hinnant and Henderson Pharmacy, or H&H as we know it. The Hinnant sons became actors and starred in the original cast of the Broadway musical You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Skip has been seen in many TV shows during the 1960s and 1980s. Of course, I can't forget to mention Misty, who isn't a person, but this pony is pretty much the island's claim to fame. Her story, written by Marguerite Henry, secured her place in household recognition. But what if I said the name Thomas Downing? Would you know who he was? I assume the answer is no. But don't feel bad. You're not alone, because most people haven't. But I'm about to change that. I'm Lexi Hubb, and this is the Bivalve Trail podcast, where stories get shucked. The goal of this podcast is to dig deep into history and uncover one of the greatest stories most people have never heard of. The Bivalve Trail, which, if that name sounds familiar to you, is also the name of a walking trail located on our neighboring barrier island of Assateague. Where stories get shucked is a pun referencing how one pries open an oyster. Using a special kind of knife with a bivalve, and a bivalve is a mollusk that's enclosed by two hinged shells and is used to open and pull the two shells apart. This process is known as shucking. Anyway, back to the story. I want to back up a moment and give you a little backstory. I'm a dramatist through and through, and I'm obsessed with telling stories, particularly through theater. I've lived on Shingetig Island for almost 10 years and have gotten to know many of the pillars of Shingetig culture, the lifelong residents commonly known as born-heres. Even though I may come here, my friendships have led me to learn tons of local history. This is how I first was introduced to Thomas Downing. Many conversations with my buddy Dale usually consisted of Shingetig trivia, where he would ask me a question that he knew the answer to, such as, what was the year of the first Fireman's Carnival? Eventually, he ran out of questions that he knew the answers to and began asking me about things that I would then have to research and educate us both on. One day in 2017, Dale said he was on eBay and saw this oyster crock. An oyster crock is a stone jar that was used for keeping and shipping oysters, primarily during the 19th century. The oyster crock was the precursor to the oyster can, which is a common collectible today. But this oyster crock he saw had the words T. Downing's Oysters, Number 5 Broad Street, New York, painted on it. The description of the item read, Born in Shingetig, VA. That's all the information Dale had. This picture and a very brief description. Dale had never heard of T. Downing, and he said with an off you go type of inflection, I should find out who was this person and what was the connection to Shingetig. Of course, step one was a visit to Google. Let me just say, I seriously had no idea the rabbit hole I was about to go down. Like I said before, my first storytelling avenue of choice is theater, but I knew a play would have to already answer a lot of its own questions before really digging into the story. These questions, many of which I'll bring up very soon, came from not taking the research at face value. Over the past 4 years, the information I found led me to make connections with other things I knew, and even question the accuracy of some of my findings. And unless the play was going to be 15 hours long, I'd have to leave a lot of things out. I felt that all of the information I was coming across deserved to be shared, and it was also necessary to analyze some of the research in order to do the story of Thomas Downing justice. I haven't given up on the dream to write a play about him, but in an effort to keep his story no longer in the dark, a podcast is the first thing I'm going to do. Thomas Downing is without the modern-day privilege of having his own Wikipedia page, which is kind of surprising, honestly. If one wants to search for him online, you need to search Thomas Downing Oysters. By the way, the oyster crock I mentioned before on eBay was sold to a man in Connecticut who has a small museum of antique oyster cans and other memorabilia. Our story begins on Chincoteague Island at the end of the 18th century. Chincoteague, a small coastal community located on the eastern shore of Virginia, is protected from the Atlantic Ocean by a barrier island, Assateague. There was no causeway or ferry, so citizens were practically isolated from the surrounding communities. At the time, Chincoteague's economy was seafood and other agriculture. According to census records, practically every household had a man listed as a waterman. Contrary to this on the mainland, the economy was tobacco farms and other crops, plantations with enslaved people. Thomas Downing was an African American born free in 1791 on Chincoteague. Yes, I said a man of color born free in Virginia, a state that would secede from the Union 70-some years later in 1861. How is this possible? Downing's parents, names I don't know, were emancipated 8 years before Thomas's birth by their master, Captain William Downing. Or perhaps his name was John? I've read both. Anyway, Captain Downing was said to be a leading citizen and landowner of the time. When the couple was freed, they assumed the captain's surname, as was common during those days. There are many people today with the last name of Downing on the Eastern Shore, which leads me to my first question. Can contemporary Downings trace their ancestry to the captain, or maybe the people he once enslaved? A DNA test would assist in knowing if my theory is accurate, but until then, I'll just conclude that they very well could be. Now, Captain Downing didn't emancipate his slaves because he was an abolitionist and felt slavery was unethical. No, he was persuaded by an itinerant, a traveling preacher named Francis Asbury. Asbury was making his way through the Eastern Shore and belonged to a fairly new religion of the time, Methodism. Methodism on the eastern shore of Virginia can be traced back to 1772, and it quickly spread through house churches and group meetings. It didn't take long for Methodism to become the largest and most active faith on the eastern shore of Virginia. During the time of the American Revolution, the Methodist Episcopal religion was opposed to slavery, and this traveling preacher warned Captain Downing that members of the Methodist Church could be expelled for owning slaves, and therefore would not be welcomed into heaven. Having been moved by religious fervor, Downing emancipated his slaves and founded his own congregation in 1783. The couple, who were now the Downings, were then employed to care for the meeting house, which was the first Downing's Methodist church. A more elaborate church that was built later and with a steeple, as well as the original meeting house, still stand today in Oak Hall on Route 13. I said before that Thomas Downing and his parents lived on Chincoteague Island, but I'm not so sure of that. Question number two. Did Thomas's parents make the commute from Chincoteague to Oak Hall every day to go to work? Even today, in a car, that commute takes 20 minutes, and of course, there were no cars then, let alone the causeway, for them to use. The distance is 4 miles from the tip of the causeway on Wallops to the first light on Main Street. I find it hard to believe that they would have most likely sailed a boat 4 miles, coming and going, every day. That doesn't include the distance to travel from the shoreline to the location of the church. So, could Thomas and his family not lived on Chincoteague Island, but rather in the area we now know as Wattsville or Wallops Island? Bob Jones, who is a Worcester County historian and also has a fascinating Facebook page, notes that colonial records list Chincoteague as spelled a couple of different ways, and is defined as a large stream or inlet. Jones stated that many, many years ago, the name Shinkatig did not specifically refer to the island like it does today. In fact, it referred to quite a larger area on the mainland, primarily from around what is now called Horntown to Wattsville and also Atlantic. This would explain why if you're driving on the road heading towards Horntown and Greenbackville, you'll see Shinkatig Baptist Church, which was founded in 1786. Even up until 1872, the post office in Atlantic was known as Shinkatig, and the post office on the island itself was known as Gingatig, with a G. Jones also states that the large stream or inlet mentioned was originally called Shinkatig Creek, but now we call it Little Mosquito Creek. So perhaps the Downings actually live just on the mainland, in an area that used to be referred to as Shinkatig. It's pretty easy to understand how biographers closer to when Downing was alive could have said he was from Shinkatig, meaning the mainland, but contemporaries have interpreted those words to mean he was from our little 7-mile-long, 2-mile-wide island. Theories aside, I like believing that Thomas Downing was from Shinkatig, the island, so I'm going to keep saying he was. As a child, Thomas Downing was sent to a tutor for school. It was the same tutor that Henry Wise went to. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because Henry Wise would later on become the first governor of Virginia, who was from the Eastern Shore, the second being Ralph Northam in 2018. Thomas was said to come from hardworking parents who, after being emancipated, acquired land and built their own home. As the caretakers of the Downing Methodist Church Meeting House, Thomas's parents became close with other families, white families, who were members of the church, and the Downings would frequently have them over for Sunday afternoon meals. One of these families were the Custises, who were connected to George Washington. At a young age, Thomas learned the skill that many other young boys who were also working long hours doing, harvesting oysters. He later bought himself a small boat and entered into the business of the oyster. In the waters surrounding the Eastern Shore, oysters were plentiful. Communities thrived off of the water and its offerings. The craft of harvesting and eating oysters goes back thousands of years, and the Native Americans who were inhabiting the area taught early European settlers how to catch and prepare the oyster. Thomas Downing was merely carrying on the tradition. At 21, Thomas left the Eastern Shore and ventured north. The desire to grow in the oyster industry could have led him to leave his hometown. Or maybe it was the fear that his freedom might quickly be taken away from him. The Methodist Episcopal Church was still officially against slavery, but during the 1820s, that opposition weakened. Church members started purchasing slaves again, and leaders in the religion just looked away. The shift could have been due to pressure coming from Southern members and was the result of slave uprisings in the South. In 1811, the largest and bloodiest slave revolt in American history occurred just south of New Orleans. As many as 500 slaves took part in what became known throughout the South as the German Coast Slave Uprising. Hundreds of rebelling slaves were killed and beheaded. More than 100 heads of murdered slaves were put on pikes along the Mississippi River as a warning to the slaves not to revolt. News of this almost successful insurrection spread quickly and widely throughout the South. The 1800 Richmond, Virginia slave uprising was stopped before it happened. More than 20 slaves were hanged when news of the planned rebellion reached the authorities. The attempted revolt was known as Gabriel's Rebellion. Thomas Downing, although free, must have felt a great threat from these events, and knowing the slave owner's reaction to the German Coast Uprising, he definitely had deep motivations for leaving Virginia. One of the members of the Methodist Church who purchased a slave again was Captain Downing himself. Although we can never know the true motivation of Thomas Downing for leaving Virginia, perhaps that purchase was the tipping point. The uncertainty of liberty must have been terrifying, and I think Downing and the many other free people of color who also left the South had very legitimate reasons to do so. During his travels, Thomas met veterans of the War of 1812 that were also heading north and followed them on to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia was considered a place of freedom for people of color. It was said that if an enslaved person was in Philly with their master for 6 months, then they would have automatically been freed. To make a living for himself, Thomas did what he knew best. He worked as an oysterman and stayed there for around 7 years. While in Philly, he met a young woman named Rebecca West, and she quickly became Thomas's wife. The oyster industry in Philadelphia was good, but New York City was said to be a boomtown. With bigger dreams of wealth and success, off the Downings went to the Big Apple. In the New York Census of 1820, Thomas Downing is registered as an oysterman. During the first half of the 1800s, the oyster industry in New York was being led mostly by other free black men who also came from Maryland and Virginia. A lot of them lived on Staten Island and would row themselves to Manhattan every day. Because of Thomas's early years of working on the waters of the Eastern Shore, he knew much more about the oyster trade than his competition. Thomas Downing knew the oyster could be something more than just a bivalve you prod open with a knife and slurp down the meat inside. He knew the oyster could be his key to a successful life, filled with wealth and opportunity, and earn him the kind of respect that very few African American men were able to receive decades before the Emancipation Proclamation. Thomas Downing was about to revolutionize the oyster industry. Thank you for listening to the first episode of the Bivalve Trail podcast and the story of Thomas Downing. My goal is to keep you listening because his life story, like so many stories that belong to people of color, have been kept in the dark for too long and need to be heard, to be celebrated. And if I can do Mr. Downing justice and keep you listening, I think you'll agree with me. The Bivalve Trail is researched and written by me, Lexi Hubb. Script editing by Kathy Hubb and Justin Eric. Podcast artwork by Angie Hetty. Recording and post-production by Longtail Studios. Music by Bill Troxler. The Bivalve Trail is a production of the Shingatig Island Theater Company and our parent organization, the Shingatig Cultural Alliance. A big thank you to our project partner, the Museum of Shingatig Island. Please visit shingatigca.org/bivalvetrail.html for my list of sources. While you're there, check out the only existing photo, well, drawing, of Thomas Downing. More on that later. There is also a picture of the oyster croc that was for sale on eBay. If your friends like a good story or appreciates history, because who doesn't, please share the Bivalve Trail with them. One more thing. I can't forget to thank Dale Holston, because if it wasn't for him, I never would have met Thomas Downing. Until next time.